Please silence your cell phones within the library.
Hello and welcome to Library Binary, a monthly tech podcast from inside the library.
I'm your host and technology trainer, Anne.
And I'm your co-host and fellow tech trainer, Elise. Remember that you can email or tweet us your questions or comments at Library Binary on Twitter or LibraryBinary at heightslibrary.org. And that email address is singular, not plural, at the end.
Yes.
Okay. So updates for August. So there's a new tech talk called Smart Tech Buying that will be Thursday, August 1st at 7 p.m. And it will actually be located at the Noble Branch. This tech talk covers basic stats you should look for in devices.
Right.
And tips for better research when it comes to buying new technology.
Exactly. So you can be smart about buying tech.
There is also Google Q&A Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. And that is also at the Noble Branch. This is kind of an introductory class to the different Google. You can also listen to the podcast episode called Not a Cookie, Monster Cookies from March.
It was a while ago.
And in that episode, we talk about basically a lot of what we cover. But the benefit of the Google Q&A class is that you can ask us questions in person.
Exactly. Although you can also email us questions and tweet questions at us, too. And we can answer on the podcast. Yeah, but there's more of a delay on that.
Mm-hmm.
We also have the Google Drive series, which is a three-part series that starts the following Thursday, August 15th at 7 p.m., also at the Noble Branch. So that will cover Google Drive, so our cloud storage service that's available through Google, Google Docs, Google Sheets, Google Forms, Google Slides. I'm tired of saying Google. All of that. All of that.
Yeah, there's a lot out there. There will be the new tech talk called Keeping Up with Tech Trends, Saturday, August 3rd at 11 a.m. If you can't attend that, you can just keep listening because we will be covering the information this episode.
Pretty much, yeah. But again, you can always ask questions in the tech talk.
Yeah. All right. And finally, the WordPress series will begin Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. WordPress is a website development maker tool. The first three classes are instruction on the different parts of it.
Exactly.
And the fourth class is when you get to come in and try to actually put your tools together. It's more like an art class than it used to be.
Yeah.
Now it's like, here's all the brushes and the paints.
And there are a lot of brushes and paints to get through.
Yeah, there's a lot of brushes and paints in WordPress. And then class four, it's like, okay.
Create your masterpiece.
Create your masterpiece.
Or at least the rough draft.
Mm-hmm. Sketch your masterpiece.
There we go.
And we will be there to help you work on dimension.
We're there for moral support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So that is the updates from the library. There's always other updates, but we'll be talking about that momentarily.
Exactly.
But first, we're actually going to do a tech term for the month, and I'm rather excited about this one in a weird way.
It's related, but not exactly the same like we've been doing the past couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. And that tech term is...
meme.
Let's spell meme.
Okay,
so also for folks.
Yeah, so it's M-E-M-E. And I want to take this first part because I actually have read the book that it comes from.
She's done her research.
I didn't know that this... I listened to the book after memes existed.
Right.
So in a 1976 book that is called The Selfish Gene, the British scientist and author Richard Dawkins created the term meme, and his definition was a unit of cultural transmission. Now, in the book, he was attempting to talk about how ideas basically are transmitted the same way genetics are. So he had this whole thing about, what's that song that people sing at New Year's? Auld
Lang Syne?
Yeah.
That one.
So he had this whole section talking about the mispronunciation of a word in that song.
Oh, yeah.
Because basically, I forget what it is, but there's a line where most people now say it as a plural. It's like acquaintances or something. I forget the exactness. But the point he's making is the actual lyrics are this. If somebody, like he makes this hypothetical where it's like you're in a room and everybody's singing it. If one person
right.
does the mistake, S's
yeah.
are actually easier to hear
they are.
Than the absence of an S. So then you're like infected with it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
then you will hear that. And that will, like, be in your brain.
Right.
And so then you will pass it on to other people the next time you sing it.
Right.
And so he created the word meme because he wanted a word like gene to talk okay. about how thoughts and ideas and concepts are transmitted from person to person. And the ones that stick in our brains
right.
are the ones that survive.
Yeah,
because
it's kind of survival of the fittest of ideas.
Yeah,
then.
Although
sort of
having known a lot of research biologists, it's they will get mad if you say survival of the fittest,
right?
Because it's not survival of the fittest; it's survival of the fed. It's a whole thing.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, like because it doesn't matter how strong something is if it doesn't adapt to its environment. Anyway.
If it doesn't get food, it's not going to pass things on.
It doesn't get food. And even if it gets food, if somebody else gets better food, it's a whole thing. But so that was the original definition of like a meme. So in Richard Dawkins' like original concept, a meme is just a unit of cultural transmission. Wikipedia has it as an element of a culture or system of behavior that may be considered to be passed from one individual to another by non-genetic means, especially imitation. So they're
okay. yeah.
they're kind of bringing it back to it. I read somewhere that, I forget who, it was like a post somewhere, but basically they were saying that the most successful meme is the song Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because it isn't just like a single lyric change mm-hmm. necessarily. It can be kind of overall cultural trends or a particular focus on one particular song or anything like that.
And somebody also, there was like a whole thing where it's like, do you remember when you learned all of Bohemian Rhapsody?
Right. Right.
And it's like, no, I don't really know. And it's like, but could you do...
The
a
vast
lot of
majority,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you were doing it in a group, would you self-select who sang what parts?
Yeah.
Like, especially when it gets to the...
Mamma Mia.
Yeah, Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Beelzebub. Anywho, so that was, like, from a research standpoint.
Right.
That's the...
And dating back to the 70s
yeah.
as well, which predates... our modern concept of the internet.
Yeah. So that's the academic version of the term. What a meme actually is in current cultural
right.
speak is it's basically kind of a joke
yeah.
that requires sometimes a certain amount of cultural understanding.
Yeah. Especially internet culture.
Especially internet culture. So there are what we'd call memes that don't require any cultural understanding. So I actually, there's this whole website, which I'm fond of, called Know Your Meme.
Oh, yes. I love them.
They're great. So they do a pretty decent job of tracking the first instance of
right.
a meme.
And that is one of the things about memes is it does kind of spread, as we've mentioned.
They do spread.
So it's tough to get back to that, like, original source.
Yeah. Sometimes they can find patient zero. Sometimes they can't. So I picked a meme that I enjoy. And so the technical term on Know Your Meme is fantasy painting object labeling. Okay. Now, it's a subset of object labeling.
Yeah.
Object labeling is a meme where there's an image that either has like people or things on it, and you simply put text over the objects to like represent something. And
right.
So fantasy painting object labeling refers to object labeling image macros in which a piece of artwork usually depicting a giant monster in battle with a small person or creature is labeled to humorously depict everyday actions or emotions.
Yep. And I have a visual right now of some of those memes.
So the one they have as the example, so this is the one that they found as their possible origin. They don't think it is, but this is the earliest they can track
it. Right.
Is a post from December 2017. It was on Facebook, and it's labeled the giant skeleton from the painting Nightcrawler by Boris Groh. G-R-O-H. What do you think that is?
Groh? It depends on what language that's in.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say German or Russian, so we're going to Groh. And so the picture is there's this giant creature standing as tall as a building, and then there's an itty-bitty person in the snow. Here, you can even...
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, and so the giant creature is labeled me at 3 a.m., and the tiny person is labeled shredded cheese from the bag.
He appears to be a freelance illustrator from Russia and is still active.
I love him. But so, like, this is... So that's like one of their first origin ones. And then it says, trend began seeing momentum in late January of 2018. Several types of these images were created on Instagram. A giant labeled me at 3 a.m. Small person labeled my meat. Like, I've seen...
It's mainly me at 3 a.m., I think, is a lot of those.
The one that I saw that had me, when I was looking this up, I actually ended up clicking on this one because there was one on the front page of Know Your Meme, and it was the giant Goliath that's, like, red, and there's a person on the bridge with, like, a sword.
Yeah.
And it's... The giant Goliath is labeled as embarrassing thing I did at 13.
Oh, yep.
And then the tiny person is me trying to sleep.
Yep. So it does become kind of a template then that can be sort of customized and changed. But the, like, original idea showed up at some point.
Yeah. Spreads. So, I mean, this is a very specific instance. The fantasy object labeling, for the most part... There's definitely a lot of them that I would consider entry-level funny. Like,
right.
We all do that thing where we wake up in the middle of the night and eat something we're not supposed to.
Right.
Or, like, everybody wakes up and remembers that super embarrassing thing they did at 13 at, like, a birthday party. And they're like, I can't sleep anymore. But that's not always the case for a lot of memes.
Right.
There's a lot of memes that... originate in obscure or deep parts of the internet, and you have to be, as we call, full-time internet to understand.
Or it's specific to, like, or it originated in a certain fandom, or it originated from, like, some stupid tweet.
Should we define fandom?
Yeah, sure.
So fandom is a term used to describe sort of like the fans or the grouping of fans or the culture.
Or the community that grows around. Yeah.
That grows around a piece of media. And I say piece of media because sometimes it's a movie, sometimes it's a show. There are books.
Podcasts.
But those groups, especially on certain social media sites like Reddit and Tumblr, Instagram too, to a point.
Yeah.
Even TikTok.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even talk about TikTok in the...
No, we did.
Oh, yeah, we mentioned it. Because neither of us really use it, so we're too old
for
this.
We're too old for TikTok. But yeah, so a lot of, like, jokes... I was trying to explain the weirdest meme I think I've seen, which was, And it was like, I would call it internet level 10. So what is lost.jpg? Do you know the one I'm talking about from the, was it Control Alt Delete, that really bad comic?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
It was a web comic. He did the episode where the character's girlfriend had a miscarriage, and it was considered like the worst episode.
Vaguely familiar.
He's got like the floppy like bang things in the drawing.
Yeah.
So there's a minimalistic rendition of that panel called lost.jpg. So first of all, it's insane because it's lines on a white square. Somebody took that and changed where the lines are to represent people to the top left corner now says young man.
Okay.
And so, and then one of them is like YMCA lyrics. And then I forget what the third one was, like the bottom left one was, but the bottom right was just gun.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's from that other one where it's like, what if I just have a gun like meme, which is like also obscure. And then they took that and then they labeled it with the exploding brain.
Oh, yep.
Like
yep.
Series. So they added that to it and then they put it on John Mulaney.
Oh, boy.
McDonald's, one black coffee, please. We have food at home.
Yeah.
Alignment chart. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, that's fine.
We'll tweet things.
No, we won't. I guess no, we could.
Well, at least we'll tweet out a Know Your Meme link.
We'll tweet out a Know Your Meme link and maybe like a blank John Mulaney alignment chart.
Something.
But anyway, a lot of memes kind of grow. And the reason I'm sort of referencing this is there is some academics are kind of starting to talk about meme culture or like meme communities as being a new age, new wave form of dadaism.
Dada.
Which I feel like Anne is the one to talk about this.
Maybe. So dadaism was in Europe in like the 1920s when things were also not, you know, great in the world. Was very avant-garde and absurd art.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I could see
it's a lot
I
of like Germans and Polish young men and women making just like
they weren't having a good time.
I've seen some of them, and it looks like the serial killer notes that we have in like popular. It's like weird magazine, but it's like art,
right?
And it's like clippings, and it's like weird paintings, and there's like random objects like stabbed into the painting, and you're like, what are you guys doing?
Right, or like very strange, like
shapes,
and like the way people are like standing in portraits, or like hands,
And then like one guy like did all that, and then was like setting metal on fire, like with it. It's just like
it was an interesting time,
but. Memes kind of have the same energy.
Yeah.
That. Like when the Kermit the Frog meme like takes on like additional lives of its own, and you're just like.
Or the fact that I feel like I've said in this podcast multiple times, just this is fine.
This is fine. Yeah. This is fine podcast.
Yeah.
So I think memes are one of those things where it's fine if you don't know anything about them.
But once you kind of have a baseline understanding and are on the lookout for them, they're everywhere.
But you kind of have to be online to see most of them.
I think I see most of them on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Often things will start on Twitter, start on Tumblr, and then they leak into Facebook because Facebook is much more reactionary at this point.
Reddit is also an origin point.
Oh, right, Reddit.
Because there was the Shaggy meme from a couple months ago.
Yeah, no, Reddit's probably patient zero most of the time. Yeah.
I'm having like weird flashbacks to the like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo being God level and like 8 images of him like killing Game of Thrones characters from like a month ago, and I was like, what's happening? Because I hadn't been online for like a day or two.
And then, right. And they do kind of pop up very quickly. They're a thing for like 2 days, and then they're gone.
Yeah, that's actually, if we're talking about memes in an academic standpoint, most of what we call memes right now, according to Richard Dawkins' original definition, would be considered unsuccessful memes because they don't imprint on the human consciousness for long term.
Right, so right.
They don't survive. They don't get passed on.
They're very viral for a short period of time, yeah. And then they're gone.
Well, do you have anything else you want to say on memes now that we've thoroughly confused
everyone?
Everyone who's listening.
Not really.
Even with visual aids, I don't know if I could explain it.
I think one way, not that this is necessarily an accurate way, is I do see them a lot as kind of like templates, like the boyfriend looking back
over his stock photo image. Yeah. Yeah.
Where people have kind of inserted their own text over that and reused that image over and over and over again with the same sort of meaning behind it, mm-hmm. but different descriptors, or even that image gets used in other images that are similar. It's a whole thing.
There's definitely a layering effect that happens. Like somebody takes like one format and combines it with like two others.
Right.
Makes a different joke, and then somebody layers that, and then you're just like, where does it end? And the answer is never.
Yep. Exactly.
It doesn't end. You just accept it, especially if you're like us and you spend all your time online.
Which leads us to this month's topic, which is how do we keep up with all these tech trends?
Yeah, so memes are technically kind of a tech trend. And we mentioned some of the websites where they come from, right? So Reddit, Twitter, Tumblr, and then like they leak to Facebook at the end.
Right.
Usually
right.
If my mother is asking me about an image.
You've seen it like... It's been several weeks ago.
Oh, years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
Years. If it's made it to Facebook, it's been years. It's been dead. But there's a lot of places that Anne and I go to look for new information so that we understand basically what's going on in the technology world.
Exactly.
So we're going to cover some of those today. So I don't know if you want to start it off.
So one thing to note with this is keeping up with tech trends is really similar to like keeping up with other types of news.
Yeah, it's the news.
Exactly.
It's just technology news.
Exactly. Like, so you are going to go to a variety of different sources probably. You will probably develop your favorites, the people that you like who write about these particular topics. And you'll probably see like similar news stories across all of these different sites because if something's happening, probably multiple places are writing about mm-hmm. it. So blogs and online publishing have really become popular in tech just because tech changes so quickly.
You can't print about it. You got to do it online.
Exactly. And it kind of is a self-fulfilling thing of you're writing about tech, so you should probably use tech and like, yeah, exactly. So we have some favorite sites that we go to. I usually check these like every day or fair amount of these like every day just to see what's happening.
Yeah. I bookmark a couple of them. Well, like for instance, today I came into work and yep. Anne was like, oh, have you heard about the thing going on with Zoom? And I was like, no, I haven't checked the websites yet.
But then you checked the websites and everyone was talking about the Zoom bug.
Actually, I think...
it's only on Twitter that I'm seeing this.
No, it was on... Gizmodo.
Okay.
But in the time between you telling me that and me actually opening it, the ruling that Donald Trump is not allowed to block people on Twitter became the next story. So that was on everything because it's like Donald Trump cannot block people on Twitter because it violates First Amendment because he says things as the president on his personal account.
Right.
And so then it becomes a whole thing. So I was reading those.
Yeah, that's
fair. And then I found the Zoom article further down.
Yes.
Anywho, let's talk about some of the places we go.
So as Elise mentioned, Gizmodo is one popular tech blog.
They're kind of like a part of a larger...
They're part of... I think it is now the Gizmodo media group. It used to be Gawker owned them, but Gawker got bought out and went out of business or something.
Unclear.
But Gizmodo is part of the same group as they now... AV Club is part of that. The Onion is part of that.
Kotaku,
which is one of the big gaming blogs.
I know. I go there for game stuff.
Yeah. So part of that same sort of grouping of things. They tend to be maybe a little bit more pop culture, maybe a little bit more...
Gizmodo and Mashable.
Yeah. They're a little bit more cultural.
Tend to have the same kind of... thing where a lot of times Gizmodo or Mashable.com, they a lot more of it is like TV shows and things going on in this and why you should be interested in this or whatever.
And they will focus on things like memes, for example. Mm-hmm. The one classic example, or classic, James sent me the article last night, mm-hmm. was... a meme that Marianne Williamson, who is one of the Democratic folks running for president, mm-hmm. she posted a Neon Genesis Evangelion meme with her own text over top of it on Instagram.
Oh, we've come so full circle. Okay.
And that was on one, I don't think it was on Gizmodo, but it was on one of the linked blogs. I think it was AV Club. So... Gizmodo pulls in a lot from their kind of sister sites, so you will see things about fantasy books and...
One that I think is a lot more device, tech-based...
more kind of hard journalism.
Hard journalism than the other two that we've talked about is Engadget.
Yeah. Engadget's probably the one that I rely on the most in terms of, like, articles that I pull in for, like... blog posts or podcasts or things like that.
I open them first when when I'm in the mood for this. I'm like, Engadget. They're the ones to check.
Right.
So after them comes TechCrunch.
TechCrunch tends to be more like tech investing more than anything, like venture capital. There's a lot of stuff about Tesla usually.
But it's a good barometer for what's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're
of like what startups are getting money right now, so you might know what's coming, what's going to be something that's coming up through the ranks.
Yeah. Ars Technica does a lot of like best of kind of thing. They try to kind of I don't love their reviews, but they do reviews.
They do a lot more deep dives in my experience. Mm-hmm. A lot. It is more kind of academic analysis of things sometimes, and which has its advantages.
Yeah. And they have they do have like a thing where it's like our methods.
Yeah.
So like they tell you why they're ranking things. So that's there.
The Verge is another one, and it is literally The Verge. Like, that's the whole URL, which is, again, sort of techie cultural stuff. They're owned by Vox. They're part of the Vox Media Group.
I do like Vox.
So it is kind of that same sort of pop cultural journalism things. If you're interested in video games as well, they have a sister site, which is Polygon, which is also really good.
I love Polygon.
Yep. They're all part of the same thing.
CNET is my go-to for should I buy this?
Right. Right.
That's like...
And all of these sites pretty much offer reviews of like the big tech things that come out. Mm-hmm. All of them will review the new iPhones when they come out, the new Google phones when they come out.
Samsung.
And you will see kind of varying opinions across them too, which is... good. Then people are testing different things.
Yeah. Next one.
BGR. I don't remember what it stands for, but another one of the big names in tech started out as a big tech blog. Tech Radar, I believe, is based in the UK. So they have a lot of like UK pricing, which throws me every single time. But they do have a lot of best of lists, which are helpful to reference. And Slash Gear is... also another big name in tech journalism.
All right. So those are just the basic blogs. And we've got a couple that are specific to devices. So there's two sort of like Android specific, which we mean phones and tablets not created by Apple or Amazon.
Right, right. So Android Police is one of the big names in that, and Android Authority is the other one. So if you are interested in what new Android phones are coming out,
better understanding settings and like new changes.
What the new operating system is going to look like from Google.
Which dessert they will name it after.
Yes, we will find out.
Dun, dun, dun. There's also some Mac specific ones, not Apple, but like also Apple. There's one called Mac Rumors and then 925 Mac. Which
Mac Rumors, I like, they have a list of like how recently things have been upgraded by Apple. So like whether it's a good idea to buy stuff now or if you should wait until the next generation.
Yeah.
So that's kind of helpful.
They're actually pretty regular on their updates.
They've gotten much more regular with their updates. Yeah.
You can be like, oh, okay, so this is when the last phone came out. So if I wait 2 months, I can get the current phone at a discounted rate.
Exactly.
Because they'll have released a new one.
And we'll talk about some of the events, timing for events a little bit later.
Yeah, that's going to come after a moment. Okay. There are some traditional publishers sort of financial information options. Wired.com is always a good option. They also have their magazine.
Although I wouldn't be surprised. I don't remember if they're still publishing it physically. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of good articles. It is more of a traditional journalism sort of vibe.
Because, like, some of the other ones can be very opinion pieces.
Yes. Yeah. And Gadget tends to be a little bit more middle of the road.
But Mashable and Gizmodo.
Yeah.
And, like, all... like lean, like especially video game reviews, they're all just opinions.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to be objective about.
It's very hard to be objective.
Yeah.
CNBC does some stuff. So does Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal.
Yep. And they will all send journalists to like the big industry events as well. So that's probably the best time to look for that. They don't necessarily do a ton of other programming.
When things come out, they talk about them, but they don't, like, not the way that, like, Engadget, like, exists to just be like, here's technology news.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right, so you have some YouTubers here. I'm not particularly knowledgeable on any of them.
So there are video creators or YouTubers are also another resource for reviews, for insights on trends and all sorts of stuff. The biggest name is probably MKBHD, whose real name is Marquise Brownlee. He goes to all the Apple events. He goes to all the Google events and stuff like that. He gets press passes and he does videos on stuff. So it is a little bit more hands-on.
Okay.
But again, very much his opinion on things.
Yeah.
And it is just him, really. All of these are really just one individual talking about it versus like a team of journalists. Linus Tech Tips is another popular YouTuber. Most of these folks have like millions of subscribers. They've built up a big fan base.
Okay.
So their opinions can kind of sway overall opinions on things. Marquise Brownlee is one of the reviewers who had issues with the Samsung folding phone.
Oh.
So he was one of the ones to break that.
Well, it was also...
it also was breaking.
It was a prototype that they, you know, were giving to people.
Yeah.
They're like, here, see what you can do. And it's like,
yeah. Unbox Therapy is another popular YouTube channel. Jonathan Morrison also does reviews of stuff. And Your Average Consumer, which is URAVG Consumer. He does a lot of kind of reviews of cheaper tech, being not so high end stuff necessarily. Still some high end stuff, but
all right. There are podcasts besides us that you can listen to.
There are.
I mean, you don't have to, but you can.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to remember all of their names.
I know they're just tiny little pictures in our notes. IRL is from Mozilla, the Mozilla Foundation.
Yes. I do like Mozilla.
So who are the creators of Firefox? All of these are kind of more overall trends, not necessarily individual products that are coming out.
Yeah.
I know Reply All is on there as well. Mm-hmm. Both Jackie and I have listened to that, and they do like deep dives into, there was one on Amazon reviews and like purchasing Amazon reviews. There's one on dark patterns that I keep meaning to listen to, of like making it really difficult to unsubscribe from things, or like designing sites so it's hard to get away from.
But there's more out there. There's also the Wall Street Journal has the future of everything.
Yeah. I think Clockwise is specifically geared to like half an hour describing specific things like concisely.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I could like that.
Yeah.
I would recommend, I know we're past this, but there's a YouTube called Kurzgesagt.
Yeah.
Which is German for in a nutshell.
Kurzgesagt.
I cannot say those.
Kurz?
Yeah. Kurz.
Gesagt.
Gesagt.
Yeah.
So they have something called, they do videos called In a Nutshell. I find they explain not tech, but science very, very well.
Yeah.
So they have like a bunch of stuff, and I very much enjoy their videos. Okay. So that's kind of resources. Let's talk events.
So there are certain times of the year where major tech announcements tend to happen. I have this, if you come to the Keeping Up with Tech Trends podcast, not podcast, tech
class.
Talk. There we go. I have a little calendar that highlights this.
Nice.
But the Consumer Electronics Show happens every year in January. That's where you do get a lot of announcements of like cool new things that are happening.
That's where you get like the cars and stuff for homes.
Yeah.
And kitchen stuff.
Yeah.
And like lawnmower, like, because it's consumers. So that's a real broad one across
exactly.
the board.
And you will also see around this time, all of those tech blogs that we've talked about will have big articles of like what they're expecting to see, what they see on particular days. So don't be surprised if you see that happen a lot in January.
Mm-hmm.
Mobile World Congress is in Madrid, I think, in February, which is one of the big mobile phone releases, generally Android, like non-Google
okay.
type announcements.
Probably all the manufacturers that are based in Europe, I'm guessing.
I think it is a fair amount of Chinese manufacturers as well.
Interesting.
But kind of a preview of trends that might be coming to phones.
Mm-hmm.
South by Southwest actually has a decent amount of tech programming in March.
South by Southwest is one of those things that started as like a cultural thing
mm-hmm.
and then like expanded. Like, I think, did we have someone from staff go? Because there were like...
Maggie went.
Cool. There's so much that goes on at South by Southwest.
Yeah.
So much.
May and June are a big set of months for tech announcements because it's like halfway through the year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's time to get things out before Christmas. You'll hear me say this again in just a little bit. But Google I/O, which is their developers conference, is in May generally. So they announce big things that are coming to the Android operating system. They're supposed to be working on a thing that generates closed captioning on your device without an internet connection for all videos, which I really, really, really want.
I want so bad.
Along the same lines, the Worldwide Developers Conference, which is Apple's developer conference, is in June, which
kinda
is...
Kind of like how the World Series is just...
Yeah. Yeah. I guess they do pull in people from across the globe, technically.
But all people from Apple across the globe?
Like outside developers, too.
Uh-huh.
But this is where they make big announcements about the new version of iOS. So this was when they announced that they're breaking the iPad operating system off into a separate thing. That all came out of WWDC.
The dark mode.
Yep, dark mode.
That was real cool. I was excited for that.
Yeah, dark mode for everything, please. E3, which is the big event for the video gaming industry, is also in June. Generally, they send all the big companies there, or small companies.
There's a lot that comes out of like E3 that isn't like specifically gaming, but like
there's hardware that comes out of it, and
you'll also see a certain level of like tech device innovation in video gamers, like industry first. Sometimes they'll roll like certain things out. They'll be like, we're going to try this on gamers and we're going to see what they do to it.
Right. Because like, they're usually fairly tech savvy and we'll figure out what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then our last kind of grouping of events are in like September or October. IFA, which is the Berlin big technology show, is in September. Apple tends to announce their new hardware, so phones specifically. Yeah. That's generally in September. And Google follows it up in October with their big announcements on hardware. Again, primarily phones at this point.
They still do the like laptop or like updates.
I think they're moving that direction. Yeah. More. Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah. And also keep an eye out for other big announcements. Sometimes Apple just drops something randomly. Like they had the Apple TV Plus was just kind of a random announcement. Google will do like random announcements throughout the year.
Amazon is all over the board. They do whatever they want.
Yeah. It's Prime Day in a couple days.
Yeah, I did see that. So that's kind of our general guide to keeping up with tech trends. A lot of keeping up with tech trends is, as Anne said at the beginning, treating it like news and consuming it like news, having somebody or a site that you go to regularly and checking and getting the handle of that. You know, we don't expect everybody to be full-time internet.
Right, exactly. But if you, and you probably will find that you are interested in certain things about technology. So maybe you are interested in like, what are the phones that are coming out? Or if you're an Apple user, like, what are the big things there? You can skip over a large number of articles then. You don't need to read every single one.
Like, I don't really read, there's a lot of stuff about like car innovation.
Yeah, I generally skip those too.
I don't super get into that.
So you'll kind of pick and choose your favorites just like you pick and choose the articles you read in the news.
Yep.
Same concept.
Alrighty. I have the pun this month.
Yes.
Ready?
Yes.
How did the computer get drunk?
How did the computer get drunk?
It took too many screenshots.
Oh, no.
Not the best, but I liked it. All right. Thanks for listening.
And remember, if you don't know your password,
we won't either.
Goodbye.